scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it looks corner to Aguilla. Aguilla left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, happy Friday. Let's get this hour of Flames Talk underway. It is Friday, October 18th, and this hour of And this hour of Flames Talk is underway. It is the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calvary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalvaryLockAndSafe.com with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, Vicks.
It's always Friday when I get to spend it with you, bud.
Let's do it. Let's have a good Friday fun day on this October 18th. And it's been a fun start to the season for the Calgary Flames. As we know, 4-0. As we know, third time in franchise history. They've started a year with four consecutive wins. But there and there's been a lot of excitement. There's been a lot of, you know, just buzz about player X or player Y or certain way the team is playing, the attitude they're bringing to the table, all that type of stuff. But there has been one theme I've picked up a lot on here over the first week plus of the season, whether it be on social media, whether it be on our text line, and that whole theme is based around some fans. I'm not saying everybody, but a group of fans that are worried about the Flames deviating from their current plan if this unexpected successful start of the season turns into an unexpected successful season. And if we're in January and the team is still sitting comfortably in a playoff spot or whatever the case may be, there is a worry from some people. And I would say fairly, I don't know, sizable one. I see different people in my mentions on Twitter all the time. I see it on the text line after games and afternoons all the time about, yeah, but like, I sure hope that if they are still fighting for a playoff spot come the beginning of February, they're not going to all of a sudden start buying and selling off assets and trying to bring right now help in. Like, I did a mailbag over at sportsnet.ca for Friday morning, and I got that question when I put out the call for questions. I got that more than anything else. Like, are the Flames going to deviate? Is ownership going to pressure Craig Conroy to accelerate the plan? All those types of things. And honestly, if you've spent any time in this market, like you and I have, like very likely you have, I tried to explain this to more of like a national reading audience who isn't smack dab in the middle of this market. But in this market, that fear, that apprehension is fully understandable.
Yep.
Because fans in this market have been conditioned to, for the last 20 years, a team that has been all about chasing the immediate. Like, I go back to, we all know the miracle run a little more than 20 years ago now that saw the Flames go to Game 7. And what followed that was, well, hey, we went to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. Now let's do what it takes to win one more game and score one more goal. And that was when Tony Amonte was brought in and Darren McCarty was brought in and so on and so forth. And so as general manager for the next 5 years or so, Daryl Sutter was chasing that. And unfortunately, while they did make the playoffs, they never got out of the first round until they missed the playoffs in 2010 and went on a five-year run without that. Daryl would, of course, then step away, and Jay Feaster tried to keep them competitive for a little while until finally they decided, hey, we don't have a choice. Jerome Iginla just wanted to be traded out here. Jay Bouwmeester asked to be traded. Robin Regier asked to be traded. And over a span of, you know, 6 or 7 months, those three players all got dealt. Mika Kiprusoff decided to retire, and the Flames were, it was basically thrust upon them, you're rebuilding, you're retooling, whatever the case may be. So they drafted Sean Monahan. They had, rest in peace, Johnny Gaudreau waiting in the wings. They had Sam Bennett, who was drafted fourth overall, and all of a sudden you're like, okay, this finally they're starting to go about this in a different direction. And that lasted for all about 1 year. And a year later, a little more than a year later, they were back to trading away first-round picks and trying to chase that fleeting success following a 2014-15 season that was somewhat of a mirage. Anyway, long story short, Vix, as I said in the article, I really do believe if you're a Flames fan worried or apprehensive that Craig Conroy is going to deviate from what he told us at the NHL draft is a 3 to 5 year plan, if he's going to deviate from that because they're 4-0 or because they might be fighting for a playoff spot in January or February, I think you can rest easy because my belief is that is not going to happen. And I'm quite confident in that belief. Like, I'm obviously not just saying that for the sake of saying it. I truly believe that they are committed to seeing this through. And the plan that is in place, Craig Conroy's been very, very forthright that they're not tearing it down. They're not trading away everybody. They're not going to try to be bad on purpose, but they are going to make a concerted effort to be younger and do things differently than has been done in the past. And that plan has now been set in place, and that plan has a roadmap, and they're not going to be detouring if this year's team exceeds expectations externally or has surprising success for those on the outside. The plan is the plan. They're set on the plan. And unlike a decade ago when they did deviate, I just don't see that being in the cards this time around. So I guess if you're a Flames fan and you're worried about that, you really can rest easy that the plan's in place and this management group's committed to seeing it through.
What I think would give me the most comfort as a Flames fan as we broach this topic is the fact that they did deviate a decade ago and look what it got them, or better yet, look what it didn't get them to. The Calgary Flames, if they're guilty of one thing over the last couple of decades, it's that chip in a chair mentality where 2004 set it in motion, where all we have to do is squeak into the playoffs and then we'll see what happens. The Flames did it and came within one win of a Stanley Cup. We saw the Los Angeles Kings do it. The Florida Panthers do it. And it's one of those mantras that's kind of repeated over and over. And the Calgary Flames aren't the only team that's been guilty of it. But it's not really a sustainable way to try to build a long-term winner, trying to just squeak in. And that's what happens. That's why everybody has referred to the Calgary Flames as being in the mushy middle for the last two decades, because they haven't been too bad to rebuild. They haven't been good enough to win anything more than, what is it, two playoff rounds in the last two decades post going to the Stanley Cup final against the Tampa Bay Lightning in 2004. So the fact that the Calgary Flames tried this a decade ago, had some success early in 2014, 2015, they beat the Vancouver Canucks in the opening round, and suddenly that signaled, or seemed to signal, whether it was from the GM chair, whether it's from the ownership, that, hey, we can be rebuilding and a playoff team at the same time. And it just switched the mode from, okay, well, we're not even rebuilding anymore. We're going to sell off assets. We're going to give up first round picks. We're going to give up second round picks. We're going to dump a lot of the futures into players that we think can put us into a position to go just a little bit further in the playoffs. And lo and behold, that didn't turn out very well for the Calgary Flames over the long haul, and in a way led them to the Craig Conroy plan of, okay, this has to be retooled. This has to be a 3 to 5 year vision where we're prioritizing development over trying to be the second wild card team and generate 3 to 5 home dates of revenue. This is really a situation that Craig Conroy can go and he can point to and say, we did this a decade ago. It didn't work that way. This is the way I envision it. This is my plan. And this is what we're going to stick to regardless of early success, regardless of outcomes early on in this retool.
And this is what I'd say. Like, hasn't Conroy, since taking over a little more than a year ago, or I guess now a year and a half ago almost, has he not followed through with the things that he said?
Yeah.
And like multiple examples of it. And it's not always like, it may not always make you happy as a fan, but at no point, at least that I can see, has Conroy said one thing and messaged to fans his idea or his vision and then done something completely the opposite. Like, I go right back to May of 2023 where he said, we want to get younger. Well, all last season, they were committed to getting younger, and we saw that time and time and time again. Young players given opportunities. You know, he said that he's not letting anybody walk past the trade deadline. If you're not signed, you're getting traded. And in every single case of the high-profile guys last year, that's exactly what happened. Yep. It wasn't always easy. He had to rip every shred of hair on his head out trying to trade Noah Hanifin because of how difficult that was and how kind of how many roadblocks there were in trading Noah. But he traded Hanifin. He traded Tanev. He traded Lindholm. He traded Zadorov. He signed Michael Backlund. He traded Toffoli. All six he followed through on. And he said, 1 year, we're not bringing PTOs to camp. And they didn't bring PTOs to camp. This year, he said, we're not tearing it down. We're not going to be bad. We're not going to try to be bad. I'm going to try to fill in free agency with some short-term deals. Yep. Well, what did he do? He went and did exactly that. He signed Bean. He signed Lomberg. He signed Mantha to short-term deals to help fill in some spots. They're still giving young players an opportunity. He said he wanted to go get somebody for Jonathan Huberdeau. He went and got Mantha. And so I guess what I'm saying is he's also said they're not in the market for signing guys long-term and trying to accelerate the process that way. Check mark there. And B, we're not in the market of trying to speed up the process and trade away our first-round picks and our future assets and our prospects just to chase something fleeting right now. He's been very open about that, too, and hasn't done it. So I guess I really do, having hosted a show like this and having taken phone calls like I have about this team over the last 15 years, I really do understand.
The concerns are valid.
The concerns as a fan are 100% valid. So I'm not trying to invalidate your fear. I'm not trying to tell you that you're being silly for thinking that way. By no means, I'm being supportive. I'm being empathetic. And I'm also being reassuring that I don't think it's going to go that way this time around. I don't think it's going to happen the way that it's happened in the past. And I think everything that Conroy has shown you in the first 18 months of his tenure is really good evidence as to why you can be confident that it's going to continue that way and his plan is going to continue to play itself out.
Well, I'd have to imagine that when he was auditioning or interviewing for the role of general manager for the Calgary Flames, he came in with a plan, and that plan was this exact plan. And it's, if you hire me, this is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to take a job to deviate from the plan that I think is the best course to turning the Calgary Flames into a year-in, year-out perennial playoff team. And it's going to be some short-term pain, but it's going to be long-term gain. And so far, to your point, yeah, he said he's executed every part of his plan that he's made public to us, to the media, to the fans, has set the expectation of this is how I'm going to go about my business, and he's done it to a T. And I was curious what the offseason was going to look like in terms of when free agency opened. The Calgary Flames had millions and millions and millions of dollars of cap space. And you could imagine how tempting that would be in theory to go out and open the wallet and sign some deals that you probably shouldn't, that would deviate from your plan. But he signs three very economical deals. You mentioned Mantha on a one-year, Lomberg and Bean on two-year deals. That's it. Nobody over 2 years. Nobody tying up. And I go back and I remember Brad Treliving when the thing that kills you most is term, not necessarily dollars. Well, the Flames have ample dollars to work with, and they didn't handcuff themselves by giving out term. And that just continues the process of what Craig Conroy is trying to do for the Calgary Flames in terms of making this team competitive long term, even if it causes some short term pain. Now, it hasn't caused them some short term pain in the 2024-25 season just yet. Now, keep in mind, we're only 5% through the season. We still got 95% to go. But this is just bonus on top of it. If you can execute your plan and you are seeing some competitiveness and you are seeing some results from the team that you have now.
All that being said, and I do think, as you mentioned, what happened a decade ago after they made it to round two against Anaheim. Like that year, the Flames defied every single outside expectation that was put on them. They probably, like,
internally,
in hindsight,
yeah,
they probably defied their own internal expectations. Then they won a round. And literally a month and a half later, after getting eliminated by the Anaheim Ducks in five games, despite plenty of evidence that suggested that 2014-15 season was somewhat of a mirage, they were trading away, what, three top 60 picks for Dougie Hamilton?
First and 2 seconds for Dougie Hamilton, yes.
And then the following year, they were trading away a second-round pick for Brian Elliott. And the following year, they were trading away a first and 2 seconds for Travis Hamonic. And it was just, all of a sudden, they went from, hey, we're in this rebuild, and we're going to see how Johnny and Sean and Sam Bennett, how they start to progress together. And they even got lucky the following year because they were bad, as it kind of felt like they were going to be, because the percentages they were playing with regressed as it kind of felt like they were going to, and they got Matthew Tkachuk out of it. They lucked into Matthew Tkachuk at 6 overall, and they were still trading away first round picks, and they were still that is a lesson, because Craig Conroy was there for it.
Oh, yeah.
That's a lesson that I think has been learned and something they don't want to repeat this time around.
Well, what was probably top of mind for Craig Conroy was, yeah, they go out, they spend a first and 2 seconds on Dougie Hamilton in the summer, then miss the playoffs and get Tkachuk at number 6. And then they make the playoffs the next season. And yeah, they go out, they get Mike Smith, and they get Travis Hamonic. And Hamonic wasn't a cheap acquisition either, with being a first and a second. And there might have even been a conditional second on top of that as well. So you're sort of in a situation where you should be rebuilding, but you went and spent assets on Hamilton. It didn't work. You found a little bit of success, and then you almost doubled down to go do it again with Travis Hamonic. And those two moves, and I know Hamilton turned into a couple of really good players for the Flames in Lindholm and Noah Hanifin, but it wasn't the path that the Calgary Flames probably should have been on. Like, if they hadn't made the playoffs in 14-15, I don't think there's a deviation from the plan that Brad Treliving had then. But the funny thing about success is you have it once, you suddenly want to start chasing it, and it takes a lot of discipline to not fall into that trap. But I believe that Craig Conroy has that discipline.
Yeah. I really, and again, everything that he has said so far, he's kind of followed through on. Maybe, and not everything that he said has been agreed upon unanimously by every Flames fan, but he has followed through with what he said, whether you agree with it or not. Like he said, we're not going to be bad. We're not going to tear it down. We're going to get younger and try to retool our way back to a competitive level in our own way. And some people don't like that, but that's what he's done. Like, and so actions are fully meshing up with the words that are being spoken, which I think is not always the case in professional sports, because there's messaging and then there's actually, and I would suggest the messaging is lined up with the actual action plan that we've seen from Conroy and Co.
It's hard to argue that it hasn't. And it's one of those situations where at certain times a GM will send a message out to the fans through the media. We're the conduit. But the message internally might be a little bit different. In this case, it feels like everything that Conroy said publicly is the exact same thing he's saying privately, whether it's to players, to coaches, to his executive staff, to ownership. It feels like there's a very real consistency to the message. And it's not like I'm involved in those executive meetings, breaking news, but it just feels like the way he's delivered the message in terms of the media and what we've seen him do and act on or not act on seems very consistent with each other.
I also think it's important to point out that, again, Conroy's plan and vision doesn't mean it's your plan and vision. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know people are frustrated. Like, well, how come they haven't traded Kadri yet? Why is Blake Coleman still on this team? That's not happening. Like, those aren't things that Craig Conroy is chasing right now. He, again, what he said is these six veterans are a part of this. They feel that getting from point A to point B is going to be led by that core six of Michael Backlund and the five alternates of Kadri and Coleman and Uyghur and Anderson and Huberdeau. Like, those six are going to be the guys who are the standard setters, the culture setters, and that he's not, He said point blank when he sat down with us in Penticton, he said the same thing to Eric Francis in the article that they did, the one-on-one they did in Penticton too. I'm not looking to trade these guys. I'm not looking to move Nas. I'm not looking to move Blake. Like, these guys are here. We want them here. I want to quiet the noise on it now. And not everybody agrees that, well, that's the way it should go, but that's how he's thinking, and the messaging is coming through, which is why I also think it's important to point out that this plan doesn't mean that they won't, or that they won't acquire other players or won't try to bring in other players to help with this vision. I really do think adding another player could be part of the vision if it fits. And I know Frank Saravalli's clip on Amazon from Thursday certainly raised some eyebrows and had some people frustrated. This was kind of the gist of what Frank had to say Thursday.
Flames GM Craig Conroy has been working the phones in recent days to try and find a center to add to the Calgary Flames in their middle six, preferably someone that fits their age scheme, preferably, if at all possible in a perfect world, a right shooting center at that.
But that's okay. Conroy has said going back to the summer that he wants to acquire, if it's out there, a young NHL-ready center. Think under the age of 25. And he said that in the summertime, so it shouldn't be a surprise that he continues to work the phones to try to do that. Why would he stop now? And so Frank's clip is great. Like, that's a right shot 24-year-old center. Yeah, that fits the vision of what the Flames are trying to do, because going back to last summer, going back a year and a half ago, one of the things we've been telling you is that younger but NHL-ready players are a part of it. Sharon Govich, that's how they see Grushnikov. That's even though he's a little older, above 25, that's even how they see Miramanov, a younger guy who is NHL-ready but maybe undervalued on his current team. Kind of like that market inefficiency. Like, hold on a second. We see a guy there that is 24 years old, but not getting the type of ice time he could get here. Let's go see if we can get him. Let's see if we can get a team who's a little down on the current player, but we see value in. It kind of worked all right for Sharon Govich. That's the type of player that Saravalli is talking about. That's the type of player that the Flames are looking for if they're going to go and get a center. Think under 25, if it can be a right shot, would be amazing. But that's always been a part of the vision. So that's not a deviation from the way they're going. That's very much in line with the plan that Conroy's put in place.
Well, look what the Calgary Flames have and don't have in their organization. We've talked a lot about their lack of center depth. It's what sparked a Martin Pospisil experience down the middle. Just look back to, I don't know, 12 months ago, where were the Calgary Flames strong in their prospect pool? You could argue goaltending, and that might have been it. And clearly, defense was a position of target. When you look at the remodeling of the prospect pool that Craig Conroy did over the past 12 months, whether it's Brustevich, Parekh, Grushnikov, Yermo, they still had Poirier, Kuznetsov, and Soloviev, but completely remodeled what this defense could look like 5 years from now. Goaltending, I think you're probably pretty happy to play out the Dustin Wolf experiment and hope that he can be your number one long term. But they don't have any depth down the middle, even less so after losing Cole Schwint, who's a 23-ish year old right shot center. You need to look at what is going to push you on. And to be very respectful, because I'm older than both of them, but Michael Backlund's 35, Nazem Kadri's 34. So in 3 years, who are your centers for the Calgary Flames? So it doesn't surprise me one bit that Craig Conroy, whether it's now, whether it's 6 months ago, whether it's a year ago, is trying to acquire centers that fit that 23 to 26 year old age range to help bridge a gap that he foresees coming in the future. And to be perfectly honest, there's 31 other teams in the NHL that would love to find a 24 year old NHL ready right shot center. So it shouldn't come as a surprise that the Calgary Flames would welcome one if one became available. And part of the job is to always make sure you know what the 31 other GMs have and what they're willing to part with. It's just due diligence. So yeah, this news that he might be looking for a young-ish right shot center that fits what the Calgary Flames are doing right now, that happens whether they're 4-0 or 0-4 in my books.
And that hasn't changed from the summertime.
No.
Yeah.
It's not as though Craig Conroy sitting there going, oh man, we're 4-0.
Let's go get a center.
Let me go find a 24-year-old center. And you're always looking for a 24-year-old center.
And you know
center.
What? Maybe he stops if Pospisil proves them right. But that doesn't mean that you just all of a sudden rest on your laurels. Let's hit a few texts at 960-960. This says, what if they're 31-11 at midpoint? Awesome.
Well, then it sounds like you have a team that you can roll with for a while.
That seems like a really good record. I still don't think he's going to be going to trade first-round picks for 32-year-olds. This says, what happens if the Flames are in the playoff picture and they trade the pick that's supposed to go to Montreal? My head does not have the wherewithal to answer that properly.
I don't think they actually can, because that condition has to be settled before you're able to move.
I think that they'd be barred from trading that pick off the top of my head. Matt and Cochran says it's not Conroy. We don't trust the people above him. This says, as a Flames fan, I want to see them back in the playoffs and make some noise. I don't want a full rebuild, and I don't want them trading away prospects. I just want to see the current team succeed. So I think that text would be very happy with the way things are going right now. This from Joey, who says, Conroy's doing a fantastic job with a sleight of hand moving us from an old-school hockey team to a new wave-style hockey team. I love the blend that they currently have with the youth and the older players. I think he's doing a rebuild or retool the right way, slow, methodically, and precisely. Yes, a number one overall pick would be nice, but bottoming out isn't the way of the Flames. This rebuild is exactly what the organization needed to be doing years ago, and they now have people in place that see the overall picture and the benefits of a slight teardown and retool on the fly. What else we got here at 960? Dan and Cochran. Dan, it's not because I don't want to read the text, just it's too much of a discussion right now for the time on the clock. Alan says Moneyball. This reads, Dylan Cousins would be a good target. He already has his contract, but he's not working in Buffalo. Somebody like that would be a great idea. Somebody in that age range, if that player was available. It's why, you know, when everybody was buzzing about Alexander Holtz or like the guys
Dawson
like that.
Dawson
Mercer. Guys like that make sense. This says, to get an NHL-ready center Frank's talking about, they'd have to unload an NHL-ready D-man. Surely, wouldn't they? That comes from Mean Gene in Edmonton. I don't know. But I do think that getting that player is something on their wish list. Wish list.
Did you say lisp while lisping?
No, I said wish lift. Wish list. I don't know what I was trying to say. I do think that is something they'd like to do, but it still has to, like, the acquisition price
has to make
still
sense.
Has to fit with the vision as well. This says, Conroy says the right things, but let's be real. These vets of theirs won't be here by the time this team is legitimately good again. If they're still here, then they probably took shortcuts and it won't work. Says who? Like, you're telling me that Huberdeau is going to be traded or Uyghur's going to be traded by the time they want to be competitive again in 3 years or so? I don't think that that's 100% a certainty. In fact, I think it is far, far, far more likely that guys like that are here when they want to be competitive again.
I would agree with those two in particular. I could understand the argument against perhaps Backlund or Kadri, but that's more of an age-related thing than it is moving them out or that they don't fit what you're trying to do. Because, though, again, as you mentioned, that core six of leadership group, Michael Backlund, the five alternating captains, are the tone setters. And I don't know if you're 4-0 right now without having those six in the room to guide the way.
And finally, Evan says, I don't understand why people think tanking means awesome. They could be Buffalo. Plus, there's no guarantee you get a number one pick. I'm cheering for wagons like Zeri and Coronado to grow into elite players and let these guys prove themselves. Danny writes, even if they do exceed expectations, why get older or buy at the deadline? The chemistry's obviously good. Look at the Preds, exceeded expectations, went crazy in free agency. Now look at their start. I agree. A young center is the type of player to go after. Great stuff on the text line at 960-960. They're sticking to their plan. That's the main message of the first half of this hour, an hour coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio with Aaron Vickers and Pat Steinberg. Groundworks are your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Friday edition of the program continues, and it's time for our Friday Daily Flames Roundtable for Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. With Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, my name is Pat Steinberg, and now Derek Wills, the voice of the Flames, joins us to complete our Friday Roundtable. And gents, I thought it was interesting at practice on Friday at Winsport. Evanescence, of course, at the Dome on Friday. They're two songs.
Hey.
They do have two songs that were hits.
More than two.
That were hits. There were two. So I thought really interesting at practice to hear Andre Kuzmenko when he came to speak with us say, yeah, I haven't been very good. Like, I need to be better. I only have one goal. I need to be better going forward. And then Ryan Huska was asked about that following. He's like, nah, I think he's been fine. I don't agree that he needs to be better. I think he's been quite dynamic for most of the season. And the only time where maybe that's waned a little bit was into the back part of Tuesday's game against Chicago. So I ask you this, gentlemen, how have we felt about Andre Kuzmenko's start to the season?
I mean, I think we've got a pretty good idea of who Andre Kuzmenko is as a player. And he's a guy who has obviously really helped the Flames power play. He's a guy who's got a great shot. I was watching him shoot the puck at practice today. Holy smokes, does that thing explode off his stick. It's a lot of fun to watch. And he's a guy who's never been great without the puck or defensively. So I suspect that's probably what he's talking about, that he wants to be better without the puck, wants to be better defensively, maybe wants to be trusted by the coaches to stick with his line mates, protecting a one-goal lead late in the third period. But ultimately, they want him to produce offense, and I think he's done a great job of doing that so far this season.
Yeah, I think he's generally been pretty good, and it's hard to argue the production that he's had through four games with a goal and four assists for 5 points. I mean, you take over a point per game any day of the week. His Corsi four is among the best on the team, according to Money Puck. His 62.7% expected goals rate is very positive. So all the things that you expect from Andre Kuzmenko, he's delivering on. And Willsey, I didn't really look at it the way you did in terms of being better away from the puck and things like that. And maybe I should have, because it makes perfect sense, because as Pat mentioned, he sat for the final 10 minutes of that 3-1 win against the Chicago Blackhawks on Tuesday. And that was largely a protect the lead type move where he put Coach Ryan Huska put Matt Coronato up with Hanzik and Nazem Kadri to sort of insulate and protect that one, what was a one goal lead at the time. So yeah, it makes sense when Andre Kuzmenko would say, well, I need to be better. Yeah. From center ice down to the opposing net, to me, he's been quite good. From center ice back to his own net, he's been what I would argue is just as advertised and what you'd expect from Kuzmenko, but it's good to hear him identify perhaps areas that he can improve on and a desire to improve upon. But from a production standpoint, it's hard to argue over a point per game through four.
I've found him to be offensively like pretty dynamic, especially, you know, I think he's been quite good on the power play. Basically, guys, and Willsey, I think you used the term as advertised. Like, that's kind of what Kuzmenko has been here. And at the age of 28, I'm not really sure that we're ever going to be talking about, you know, Andre Kuzmenko, the Selke Trophy candidate. Like, that's not who he is. And so using him and playing to his strengths, like I think they have, is the way to go. Like, feed him a lot of zone time. Like, feed him a lot of offensive starts. Give him an opportunity to do what he does best, and that is, you know, be dynamic and keep the puck and distribute it and find guys and seams that a lot of other guys don't see. And he's got, as you mentioned, Willsey, like, he's got one of the best shots on the team that just explodes off his stick. Like, just play to those strengths. And I feel like the Flames have done that through four games. I feel like that has allowed him to look pretty dynamic and make a pretty big impact. And honestly, there are lots of guys in this league who, not because they're playing poorly, but just based on who they are as players, that do maybe see a little bit less time in a third period when you're essentially in a one-goal game like they were against Chicago on Tuesday. That was a one-goal game until Coronato scored into the empty net. And so, yeah, a lot of there are guys that coaches just trust less in lead protecting scenarios around the league. So I don't even see him getting sat down necessarily as an indictment on who Kuzmenko is as a player, more so just that's some situational awareness from the coach. So long story short, Wilsey, I think Kuzmenko's been, he's got more than a point per game. He is looked more dynamic than not, and I think he's been used properly so far through the first four games as well.
I would agree. And first of all, I wonder if this stems back to last season. So Rick Tocchet clearly wasn't happy with Andre Kuzmenko's 200-foot game, and I think that's why the Canucks decided to move on from him and trade him to the Flames. So I do wonder if that's still in the back of Kuzmenko's mind, and I'm sure that, you know, Huska and the coaching staff with the Flames would love him to be more of a 200-foot player. Also, understanding and appreciating who he is as a player. And as long as he's productive offensively, I think you can live with some defensive deficiencies. But ultimately, I think it's a great thing that Andre Kuzmenko is saying, I need to be better, because that tells me that he's focused on being a more complete player. And if he can turn into that type of guy and continue to produce offensively as he has in his first two plus NHL seasons, then you've got an even better player on your hands. And you know, I'm sure he took it to heart that he didn't play in the back half of the third period with his team trying to protect a one goal lead on Tuesday. So what he said, I love it, because I think he's had a strong start to the season based on who he is as a hockey player. But the fact that he wants to improve on that and become better, I think that's great for him and great for the Flames.
Yeah, having that awareness of the situation and having that drive to want to improve so that you are kind of, if that's a two-goal game, I don't imagine he sits for the last 10 minutes. So I'll agree with you, Pat, to a large degree that it wasn't necessarily an indictment of what Ryan Huska was getting out of Andre Kuzmenko that game. It's more of an identification of what you need in the final 10 minutes to bring this one home. It's game management. It's understanding game circumstance. And we see all the time in the NFL players getting quote unquote game scripted out depending on the flow of the game, whether it's a running back, whether it's the receiving core. I feel like that was a case of this, but having Kuzmenko identify potentially that, hey, if I can improve in certain elements, I'm not going to be the guy that's going to be cold for a little while.
So Andre Kuzmenko, 5 points in four games for a Flames team that has won four in a row for the third time in franchise history to start a season. It's our Daily Flames Roundtable with Derek Wills and Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Flames won their fourth game on Tuesday in that 3-1 win over Chicago. They don't play again until Saturday. So a little bit of a break between games. Gents, how much do we worry that that screws with their momentum a little bit?
I'm not that worried, to be honest. I mean, I think they've had 3 days to feel good about their great start to the season. They're 4-0-0. They're pretty proud of the way they've won those four games for the most part. I mean, there have been some lapses, but you hear the old cliche, you got to play a full 60 minutes. Nobody ever plays a full 60 minutes. You want to try to play as close to a full 60 minutes as you can. And I think the Blackhawks game was probably the Flames' worst game so far this season, but sometimes you've got to win with your B or C game. And I think the Flames did that on Tuesday night. And I actually think that it's a good thing in the sense that they just played 3 games in 4 days. And prior to that, you know, training camp in the preseason is a hectic time for these guys. They're on the ice a lot. There's not a lot of downtime. And there's not a lot of practice time once the regular season starts. So I look at the 3-day break the Flames have had see what I'm dealing with on this radio head? I got strange people walking by making strange noises. They've got time to celebrate what they've accomplished, to try to get to another level with their game. They had a little bit of time off. They took Wednesday off, wound up going into Banff, and then practiced in Canmore, got to spend some time away from the rink with their teammates, and then they traveled to Seattle today after practicing. So I think getting a little R&R, spending some time with your new teammates, those are both positive things. And as far as momentum is concerned, hey, if they get off to a good start in tomorrow's game against the Kraken, we won't be worrying about what momentum they may have lost during a 3-day break between games. If they don't, maybe it's something we'll talk about.
Yeah, I'm more worried about how it's screwed with my momentum, to be honest with you. This 3-day break has really thrown me for a loop, as Pat Steinberg can attest. You mentioned it, Wilsey. They played 3-4 to start the season, so having a run of practices or maybe getting an off day and doing some team building certainly isn't the worst early in the season. And it affords them a little bit of practice time, a lot of video time to go over what's worked and what hasn't through those first four games without having to worry about doing pre-scouting or, you know, focusing on who's coming in to the Scotiabank Saddle Dome within 24 hours. It's a little bit of a luxury from, and I'm saying this from the outside looking in, but it feels like it'd be a little bit of a luxury to review and recap what's worked and what hasn't worked from an individual perspective or a line perspective or a team perspective, so you can fine tune some of the messaging that you were doing in the preseason with a smaller group and putting everything back into a spot where you can get really dialed in after a 3-day break.
I mean, yes, I always worry about, worry's the wrong word. I always think that a 3-day break in the middle, like, yeah, could it? Sure, it could, or it might not. I mean, that it's always something that every, all 32 teams have to deal with that at some point over the course of a season. So yes, could it mess with their momentum? Of course it could. However, the more important thing that we haven't brought up yet to me is that what else it does is gives a few guys a little bit of extra time to heal up. Like, they paid the price for game four of a regular season. That third period was not for the faint of heart. Ask Blake Coleman or Justin Kirkland or Sam Honzek or Martin Pospisil or Mackenzie Weegar. Like, all those guys, to some extent, left that game feeling worse for wear, whether it be a bruise on the foot, whether it be a little bit of a twisted up lower body, whether it be an upper body injury that's going to keep Honzek on the shelf week to week. I mean, the Flames paid the price in that game to close out 2 points. So especially for the guys that are able to keep going, like Coleman and Weegar, et cetera, like even just a few extra days not to be getting their body pounded like that is probably a good thing. So that's the other part of the equation that I think is important, is that, you know, for a 4-0 start when it comes to Sharon Govich and Rooney and now Honzek, I mean, the Flames have been beaten up pretty good in this 4-0 start. Like, this is the most I can remember in recent years of injuries being a part of an early season. That also, I think, needs to be taken into account. A Wednesday, Thursday, Friday without high leverage and high intensity contact is probably a good thing.
Yeah, and I mean, let's be honest, the last couple of years, the Flames were actually really lucky when it came to long-term injuries. They were a pretty healthy hockey team. So, you know, this year, Lady Luck's gone the other way, and they've had some bad breaks, and they've lost their top two left wingers. If you look at who's been playing on the left side of Nazem Kadri, it was Yegor Sharangovich, and he gets hurt in the final preseason game, and then it was Sam Honzek, and he gets hurt in the last game. And, you know, I guess the other good thing is it gives Kevin Rooney a little bit of time to get back to 100% or closer to 100%. And he goes from being in a non-contact jersey at practice yesterday to a full contact participant at practice today. So that gives you a little bit more depth. But, you know, for me, fellas, you could see that the top players were tired on Tuesday. And Ryan Huska talked about it. He said his fourth line was his best line. And I really believe that that has a lot to do with the fact that the fourth line doesn't play as many minutes as the first, second, or third lines do. And that playing three and four, and those guys playing all the minutes that they did, it kind of caught up with them in that game against the Blackhawks. And you could see it. A number of the Flames' top players did not have their A game on Tuesday night. They still found a way to win, thanks in large part to the fourth line and some role players. But I suspect having 3 days between games is more of a good thing than a bad thing for this Flames team.
Well, there's certainly no excuse to come out flat against the Seattle Kraken on Saturday when you have had 3 days off, so that'll be something to look for as well. But, Willsey, are you calling Nazem Kadri a jinx? Sharon Govich goes down on the left side. Honzek goes down on the left side. What are you driving at here, bud?
No, you're the jinx.
I'm something, all right.
I am interested to see what 3 days off ends up bearing for the Flames when they're into Seattle on Saturday. But hey, they're 4-for-4. There's and last thing I'd say, and Willsey, I'm curious if you've picked up on the same thing. Like, right now, people love this team. Like, the amount of positivity that surrounds the group, the amount of, like, I love the way they're playing, I love the way they're selling out. Like, I don't know if you've picked up on it the same way I have,
oh, yeah.
But people love this team right now and love the way they're going about their business, love the path they've taken to a 4-0 start.
Well, Pat, I'm going to ask you a skill testing question, okay?
Hit
I want to see how well you know me after 10-plus years.
Uh-huh.
What's my favorite movie franchise?
Rocky.
Correct. What was Rocky? Rocky was an underdog. People love underdogs. The Flames are an underdog this season. Sportsnet had them 31st in the preseason power rankings. People want to see underdogs succeed. The Flames are an underdog. I think they actually relish playing in that role. And they want to have an opportunity to prove people around the league wrong. So I do think that there's been a bit of a groundswell around the league and certainly around the city saying, hey, you know, these guys, they're easy to cheer for. No one gave them a chance to be competitive. They're 4-0-0 to start the season for just the third time in the history of the franchise. They're fun to watch the way they play. They've got some skill. They play with grit. They've been the most physical team in the league. Yeah, I do think that people have started to rally around this team. And again, I think they're an easy team to cheer for.
Yep. Thank you, Wilsey. Be well. We'll talk to you on Saturday, hey?
Okay, guys. Have a good weekend.
That is your Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. And just a couple of notes. Yes, Kevin Rooney was back in a regular jersey, so he was non-contact on Thursday, regular jersey on Friday. And again, that's why we were telling you on Thursday's show, like, probably not expecting a recall here because Rooney was close. The word I'd gotten was like Rooney was
underdog. Are you going Kelly Rudy there?
Or Kelly Rudy. Both great people. Both heroes in different ways. But like Rooney knocking on the door to be ready, they could activate him off of IR at any point. Last check, Hanzek wasn't on IR, but they could always flip him to IR and bring Rooney off to keep themselves at 23. But looks like they'll be going with the group they've got right now as opposed to recalling anybody. You can understand that. And it does indeed look like Miramanov is trending towards healthy scratch territory. Second straight day, he was practicing on the fourth pairing with Hanley. Second straight day, Barry was practicing with Uyghur. Now, head coach Ryan Husko wouldn't confirm the way it's going to go, but looks like that's the way things are trending for Saturday's game in Seattle as well.
Never hurts to have a little competition on the level throughout your lineup, but in particular for the Calgary Flames on the blue line when you've got eight healthy defensemen. And we saw Jake Bean sit up in Edmonton in favor of
Tyson Barrie.
Yep. And we'll see potentially Miramanov sit in favor of Tyson Barrie. So it's just an opportunity for Barrie. It's an opportunity for the guy coming out of the lineup to reset, maybe take in the game from a little bit different vantage point, and then get right back in there.
That'll start to wrap us up this hour. Cam Hughes, our producer, Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.